Sometimes the fun begins when the paved road ends. Chevy Silverado 2500 HD is made to work hard and play hard on the road or off. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com for details and experience life in HD.
Every Wednesday at this time, Anna DeVlantzis joins us for This Week in Chicago History, sponsored by VisitUIHealth.care. And I don't think a lot of people realize March Madness started right here in Chicago, didn't it?
Okay, so happy you're saying that. Good morning, Bob, because I did do a little unofficial poll with friends and saying, hey, wait a minute, you know a lot about basketball. Did you know the very first NCAA men's basketball tournament was held right here in the Chicago area? The game, Bob, was held March 27th, 1939, at Patton Gym on Northwestern's Evanston campus. The game, that original one, was between Ohio State Buckeyes and the Oregon Ducks. Ducks won. Oregon claimed the first NCAA championship title. But before that point in time, Bob, college basketball teams would have won like a conference or maybe a regional championship, and then that was it. But the National Association of Basketball Coaches wanted to change that. They wanted the national tournament, and they did. They formed the organization initially. The NCAA stepped in after that. And it's pretty cool because back then there were 8 regions in college basketball, 8 winning teams, 1 from each region. Played single elimination games for the championship. So born in Chicago, it has expanded, of course, over the decades. From 8 teams, it became 16 teams in 1951, then 32 teams in 1975, 40 teams in 1979. By 85, it reached the 64 teams we have today. Pretty cool, right, to think about the birth of modern-day March Madness. Right here, Chicago area.
And this week in 1982, North Carolina fans certainly remember the NCAA championship, don't they?
North Carolina and basketball fans have probably gone back to revisit this moment in time. March 29th, 1982, a 19-year-old college freshman out of the University of North Carolina named Michael Jeffrey Jordan hit the game-winning shot to launch his team to an incredible championship victory. Recall that Jordan made a 16-foot jump shot, 15 seconds left to give the Tar Heels that one-point advantage. And Jordan famously told reporters afterwards, I didn't even see it go in. I didn't want to look. But everyone else saw it go in because it was such an incredible clutch shot and really elevated Michael Jordan's name in the basketball world at that moment when everyone was watching. Really hard, Bob, to find clips of MJ from that time. We did manage to find one rare clip of Michael Jordan, 19 years old, telling a sports reporter about that game, that shot.
Young Michael with Al McGuire. What a shot that was.
Yeah, what a throwback moment in time, too, to think about that for Michael Jordan. How it changed everything, really, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yep. And the big news this week in 1981, the assassination attempt.
Yeah, you know, go back to March 30th, 1981, Bob, a quiet Monday afternoon in Washington, D.C., when tragedy struck. 3 Illinois men were shot by John Hinckley, one of them President Ronald Reagan. President Reagan was leaving the hotel ballroom when he made a speech to union workers. He stepped outside. Hinckley opened fire. 6 shots were fired. The president was shot near his lung and recovered after surgery. He was even joking in the operating room, which was pretty incredible if you think about it. The second Illinois man was James Brady, Reagan's press secretary, who was from Centralia, Illinois. He took a bullet to the head, survived, and went on, of course, to become one of the nation's most prominent gun control advocates. The Brady Bill, named for him, where that instituted that 5-day waiting period for handgun licenses or permits. And then there was Chicago native Secret Service agent Timothy McCarthy, who valiantly turned his body toward the gunman, spread his arms wide, and shielding the president as he was trained to do, he took a bullet to the chest and survived, went on to become Orland Park's police chief. We pulled a clip from that fateful day, a news radio cut-in from that moment, March 30th, 1981, when it appeared, they weren't even sure, President Reagan had been shot.
Pretty dramatic. And a fourth man was also shot, correct?
D.C. police officer, not from Illinois, but worth, of course, remembering as well, Thomas Delahunty also survived. Interesting, Bob, John Hinckley was pled insanity famously, as we know, spent 30 years in a psychiatric hospital, but has since been released, and I believe now has some sort of YouTube channel. So there you go, piece of history, very connected to Illinois.
More This Week in Chicago History with Anna DeVlantzis coming up. That was recorded this week in 1984. Anna?
Right. Singer-songwriter Steve Goodman recorded that just amazing song, and it was created at the request of WGN Radio. WGN's program director, Bob, reached out to Goodman. He was there in the studio for a WGN Radio appearance and like, hey, wait a minute. We're really looking for a fresh, upbeat Cubs theme song to replace the old one, which was not quite as jazzy, and they wanted to play it on the radio. So Steve Goodman went to work. He wrote and recorded Go Cubs Go for WGN Radio. It aired this time, 1984. We pulled a fun clip, though. This is a fun one, Bob. This is the song Go Cubs Go replaced. See if this old song sounds familiar to you. Not quite as jazzy or upbeat, but it aired from 1960 on until 84 on WGN Radio.
The Chicago Cubs are on the air. Yeah, I remember it well. I still like it. Nothing against Steve Goodman, who I went to grade school with, but that's a great old song. Good to hear that again.
It is. It's an awesome one, yeah. It's just, I guess I take it back. It is pretty jazzy and upbeat. So
yeah.
I don't know. But did you know all the words to it, Bob? That was the difference.
Of
I think
course.
Go Cubs Go so easy. You did. Okay. All right. I love it.
Yeah. That was the beginning of every broadcast back in the day. And the Cubs celebrating 150 years this year, aren't they?
Yeah, March 27th, 1902, the Chicago Cubs, the Chicago Cubs got their name. I want to take you back to 1902. First of all, it wasn't a name officially derived from team ownership or any slick marketing firm. It was a press coin term, the Cubs, that originally appeared in the paper. In 1902, the team's manager was making this big announcement. All the papers were covering it. They were going through this big rebuild, and they were going to hire all these bring on all these promising young players and rookies. And young players back then were referred to with a slang term, Cubs. They called them Cubs, Cubs versus varsity, etc. And when they brought them on, the Chicago Daily News went with it first, saying that this is the Cubs, they're going to be playing, and the Cubs, and it was all across the paper. And before that, they were the Chicago White Stockings because of their uniforms. But here's baseball historian, interesting clip here, Bob, describing the shift to the Cubs name when the newspapers started it.
Yeah, and then eventually that logo appeared on the uniform, didn't it?
The C with the that's so famous as well is also came along not long after that. And by 1907, Bob, by the way, the Cubs officially was taken over by the team as the official name. It was on scorecards and programs, but already colloquially, I'm having trouble saying that name. People were using that word already widely across Chicago, and then it just became official 1907.
And finally, we fondly remember Tony the Tiger. What happened to Tony? Did Tony get laid off by the Kellogg's company?
Tony got the job, Bob, but before it wasn't always that certain before that, because Tony the Tiger is a Chicago icon, iconic mascot born from Leo Burnett's advertising firm, the creation of an art director there. Kellogg's hired them at the time. They're like, we got this new cereal, Frosted Flakes, and we want a new mascot. We want a mascot. So originally they tried out Katie the Kangaroo, and they tried out Elmo the Elephant. They didn't get the job. People really loved Tony when they were checking him out, and they were doing these they test them with people and see which one do you like, and they like Tony. We tracked down an old Tony the Tiger from the 1950s and TV ad. See if you recognize the modern day Tony in this vintage TV ad.
Yeah, it was April 4th, 1952. Tony the Tiger debuted on TV.
Mm-hmm.
I got to go get a bowl
really
of cereal
great.
Right now. It still
not
works.
Not Marianne approved, but they're still
no,
pretty great.
No, no. Thanks, Anna. Talk to you next week.